based upon human dignity, the nature of a human person, that we protect certain human rights.
Dr. Ryan Anderson of the Heritage Foundation talking about his presentation at the Fall 2018 Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference.
And then amongst these human rights, the very first one is going to be the right to life, and then the right to liberty, especially religious liberty, and then how freedom of speech, freedom of press, freedom of assembly and association, how these things actually hang together or they fall together. That a society that doesn't respect the free exercise of religion also will tend not to respect freedom of speech or freedom of press or the right to life or rights of private property, that these civil liberties tend to hang together.
You can meet and hear Ryan Anderson making the case for our first freedoms at the Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Find out more and register at issuesetc.org. Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We have had many conversations here on the program about natural rights, that is, rights that are intrinsic to human beings simply because they are human beings, sometimes called natural rights, and closely linked to that idea of natural law. I think this is probably the first time I've heard of nature rights, that is, that nature itself, the trees, the birds, the rivers that flow, the oceans, the land masses, the sky, the air, the clouds, the planet itself has rights. Might sound a little bit overreaching, but there are people who are trying to make arguments. They are seriously trying to make arguments that such is the case. We're going to talk about the nature rights movement. Joining us to do so on this Tuesday afternoon, Wesley Smith, a regular guest, senior fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism, consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, and author of several books, including The War on Humans, and a recent column titled The Return of Nature Worship. Wesley, welcome back.
Hey, Todd, how are you?
I'm doing well. You have studied and written about, in essence, human rights for a long time, especially with respect to the assertion of other categories of rights, and I think probably animal rights most often. As you've watched this, was this simply this move toward nature rights simply inevitable?
I wouldn't call it inevitable, but it's certainly a logical extension of what happens when you reject human exceptionalism, when you decide that being human is not special, when you decide it is not unique and that it does not have special value. And one of the things you said in your introduction I'd like to correct, it isn't just being argued, it's actually being implemented. Four rivers in the world are now rights-bearing entities under the law. And that means they have rights co-equal with human beings. And that's the Amazon River, the Ganges River, a river in New Zealand, which was put into effect by Parliament, and a tributary river of the Ganges. Two glaciers are rights-bearing entities. The Colorado River actually filed a lawsuit. I mean, I know that sounds ludicrous, and it is ludicrous. That was later withdrawn, but the people who filed the lawsuit trying to have the Colorado River declared a rights-bearing entity have promised to file hundreds of more such cases. You've had a case in that went to the New York Supreme Court, which is called the Court of Appeals, to try to give chimpanzees rights and writs of habeas corpus, and one of the high court judges, while that did not succeed, one of the high court judges basically said that chimpanzees should be declared to be persons and have rights like humans. So this is not just something that radical fringe people are arguing. It is something that is actually being imposed either by courts or enacted by legislatures. Ecuador has the rights of nature in its constitution. Bolivia has adopted the rights of nature. More than 30 cities in this country have adopted the rights of nature, including Santa Monica. And Todd, I'm from Los Angeles. I know Santa Monica like the back of my hand. There's no nature left in Santa Monica. So why would they do that? It's a statement of human unexceptionalism. It is a statement that says, ideologically, human beings are just another species in the forest.
So what are the arguments in favor of this? How would you summarize it?
Well, what the advocates for nature rights say is that we face an environmental catastrophe, whether it's from climate change or from degradation of environmental ecosystems and so forth. And therefore, we have to completely shift the way we look at our relationship to the natural world. And they say that if we come to see ourselves as just one among many brother and sister species, that we will tread more gently on the earth. I take the opposite perspective. One of the things that gives human beings a unique status is that we are moral creatures. We're the only known moral agents in the universe. And we have the obligation to treat nature properly. If we ever come to see ourselves as just another animal in the forest, that's precisely how we'll act. There's no reason, if we're not unique, if we do not have special duties, if we do not have exceptionalism, for us to treat nature specially at all. Moreover, it isn't necessary. If you take a look at the incredible environmental improvements we've made since I was a little boy. When I was a kid in Los Angeles, I lived in a town called Alhambra, which is maybe 15 miles from the Santa Monica Mountains, which are about 6,000 feet high. You couldn't see the mountains in the summer because of the smog. That's not the way it is there anymore, because we undertook proper environmental laws to clean up Los Angeles's air. Now, it's still not the best, but it's certainly different than what it was. When I was a kid, rivers used to catch fire. But, you know, we've stopped that. The best example I can say is Yellowstone National Park. I'm sure many, if not most, of your listeners have been there. And if you haven't been there, please go. It is a wonder of the world. And that place has been kept pristine, not because we gave Old Faithful the rights, the geyser, the rights of a person, but because we understood it as our obligation as human beings to treat that unique place in a special way.
So a couple questions. What kind of groups are we talking about here who are either asserting or trying to get enacted into law or into some kind of public recognition, nature rights?
Well, they're increasingly mainstream in the environmental movement. Perhaps the most influential one, the one that has pushed this around the world most powerfully, is called the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, or CELDF. And they're the ones that got Ecuador to put nature rights in its constitution. Here's what it says in Ecuador's constitution. Nature, or Pacamama is the earth goddess, by the way. There's a lot of paganism in this movement. Where life is reproduced and exists, has the right to exist, persist, maintain, and regenerate its vital cycles, structure, functions, and processes in evolution. And that, take away the Pacamama part, that is basically the way, the kind of the wording that most of these nature rights laws have. The idea of the right to persist, maintain, and regenerate vital cycles. It's almost a right to life for nature, by the very people, by the way, who often reject the right to life for humans. So CELDF, the Community Environmental Legal Defense Fund, is a major player in this. You also have things like the Earth Law Center. You may have seen the ads, the Earth Deserves a Good Lawyer. And they're promoting something, for example, the Universal Declaration of River Rights. And so under this view, rivers have the right to flow, the right to perform essential functions within its ecosystem, the right to be free from pollution, the right to feed and to be fed by sustainable aquifers, the right to restoration, the right to native biodiversity. Well, if you enact that kind of river rights, you're not going to be able to put up dams. There's not going to be able to be any kind of adequate irrigation from rivers. It would be a catastrophe for human thriving.
So who legally would speak for nature if it comes push comes to shove?
That's the insidious part, because the way these laws are established, obviously nature has no clue about any of this. Mosquitoes, which are part of nature, don't know that they would be caught up in nature rights, or even viruses. I mean, viruses are part of nature. Granite outcroppings, the rivers, as we've discussed already. So these laws say that anyone who believes that the rights of nature are being violated can step in on behalf of nature and bring lawsuits to prevent the nature's rights from being infringed upon. So what this is about is preventing any kind of large-scale development or exploitation of natural resources, so that if there was going to be a subdivision, we'll say, out in the country, somebody could say, this is going to violate the rights of the grass in this area, the field mice, the rattlesnakes or whatever it might be, and they would bring a lawsuit to try to prevent it. And in these lawsuits, if they ever came to pass, the rights of nature would have to be given equal consideration with those of people, which would make it a very difficult litigation. And even if this litigation failed, you can imagine the blackmail opportunities. Hey, you want to have that new timber area for your lumber company? Well, you better pay up or nature's going to sue, you know? And imagine trying to get a liability insurance policy if you're a cattle rancher and you know that the cattle can sue you because of animal rights, you know, animal slavery, or that the ecosystem that you where you want to put your cattle to feed can sue. The whole thing is intended, one, to destroy capitalism and free markets, and two, to really cut on human thriving off the land.
Let's kind of take it apart, if we could, to explain why this is not only a nonsensical notion, but that it is a dangerous idea in and of itself. Before we take this break with about a minute, you say that nature rights, that idea, violates human exceptionalism. Go over that briefly, if you would.
Well, basically what it is saying is that human beings do not have unique value, that human beings are not a special species, that there's no hierarchy of moral worth that we should recognize. But what's really ironic about that, Todd, is since nature, you know, rights usually are reciprocal. You know, you have rights and you have responsibilities. That's part of how this works. Because humans, by their nature, are moral entities, moral beings, moral species, unless somebody is injured or too immature to actually exercise that, we all have duties. We have responsibilities. Nature doesn't have any of that. Nature is amoral. Animals are amoral. Of course, you can't even get to discuss that with regard to rivers. They're geological features. So what we're really talking about here is imposing a draconian imposition of duties on human beings to self-sacrifice ourselves for some ideological pursuit of nature rights, which, by the way, demonstrates that we're exceptional because we're the only species upon whom such draconian duties could be imposed.
Wesley Smith is our guest. We're talking about the nature rights movement. We come back from this break. He says it also kind of makes nonsense of the entire idea of rights. Wesley Smith is senior fellow at the Discovery Institute's Institute on Human Exceptionalism. We'll be right back.
The Church's Music from the 20th Century. The 17th Century. The 11th Century. The 8th century. The 4th century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
Your comprehensive source for information, teaching, and truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
You can meet and hear Anthony Esselin, John Warwick Montgomery, Ryan Anderson, Bev Yonke, Mark Kaltoff, and Chris Rosebro at the 2018 Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference Friday, November 9th and Saturday, November 10th in Dallas, Texas. Early bird registration is $110. For more information, visit issuesetc.org. The Fall Issues Etc. Making the Case Conference, November 9th and 10th in Dallas.
Are you tired of working out at big box gyms? You'll find quality personal training and qualified instruction at Performance Fitness in Edwardsville. You can even work out for a full 30 days before making a commitment to join. Find out more at performancefitness618.com or call 618-692-5063. Performance Fitness is the facility in the St. Louis Metro East where the focus is on member results, not membership numbers. Performancefitness618.com.
You'll find engaging illustrations, colorful layouts, and helpful charts in the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for August, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org or call Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. The Issues Etc. Book of the Month, Luther's Small Catechism with Explanation, 2017 Visual Edition.
But I know every rock and tree and creature has a life, has a spirit, has a name.
Welcome back to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. We're talking about the Nature Rights Movement. Wesley Smith is our guest. He's a columnist for National Review, author of several books, including The War on Humans, and a recent column titled The Return of Nature Worship. Wesley, what does the idea of nature rights do to the very concept of rights itself?
Well, if everything has rights, because when you proclaim that nature has rights, you're talking about everything on the earth. Well, that means nothing has rights. And in a sense, the more we create kind of this overabundance of, you might call it rights inflation, where right to this, right to that, animals supposedly have rights, nature has rights. Well, at some point, that begins to devalue rights in the same way that inflation devalues currency. Rights are important and precious things. They are the reason we have liberty in the West. And if you're going to start spreading rights around so that anything and everything has them, then eventually they become meaningless.
I think about, nature is an all-encompassing kind of a idea, although I imagine that the people who are pushing these things are not talking about my office chair in which I'm sitting right now. Can my office chair sue me for undue pressure or something like that? I think they're...
Well, the office chair probably wouldn't be nature. That's a manufactured product. I don't think we have yet got to manufactured products rights, but nothing would surprise me.
You also say that that nature rights is in... I mean, laws are good as long as they are enforceable. And you say that this is incapable of a nuanced enforcement. What do you mean by that?
Well, you know, we have environmental protection laws, and some of them are quite draconian. I mean, they're very harsh. For example, the Endangered Species Act. If somebody, there's an endangered species on your land, you know, you're going to lose the right to use your land the way you want to, because we have decided as a society, through democratic deliberation, whether one agrees with the law or not, that the needs of protecting that endangered species, it's not a right, but that our duty to protect as human beings that species that is in danger, that is on your land, will take priority over your right to use your land the way you choose. But once that species, we'll say, has improved and increased to the point it's not endangered, well, at that point, the categorization of that animal or that plant or whatever it is can change, and that will then impact the way, might open up your right to use your land in the way you would have been in any other circumstance. If, for example, wolves. Wolves have been on the endangered species list. Now wolves are beginning to thrive, and there's a lot of talk about taking them off that endangered species list. If that occurs, then the way wolves will be treated will be changed from the way they are treated if they're considered to be endangered, wolves in the United States. There is none of that nuance that can occur with nature rights. Under nature rights, whatever aspect of nature is supposedly affected by whatever ideologue decides to bring the lawsuit must be given equal consideration. And it doesn't matter whether it's thriving or not. It doesn't matter whether it's polluted or not. It doesn't matter whether it's endangered or not. And so while we have some very stringent environmental protection laws, those are capable of shifting and changing with time. If it's a right to nature to thrive and reproduce, et cetera, there is no nuance. It is equal consideration in all circumstances. And you can certainly see how that will totally handcuff human thriving.
Finally, with only about a minute here, you say, and you have said already here before, that this assertion of nature rights is completely unnecessary. How so?
Well, I think we've talked about it because we already have environmental protection laws. If we need more stringent or more tough laws, then let's pass those laws. But you do not have to create a right and invent something that is utterly nonsensical and turn logic on its head to protect the environment. And doing so would be harmful. And I want to emphasize at the end of this interview what I did at the beginning. We're not talking just about people with these kind of crazy ideas who are off radicals in some fringe groups. We are talking about people within the mainstream of the environmental movement pushing this. And we are now talking about a circumstance in this world where rivers have been given rights by courts and by parliaments, where an orangutan in Argentina was given a writ of habeas corpus and declared to be a rights-bearing person. So this is very serious stuff. The reason I wrote this for the Acton Institute, I hope people will read it. It's at the Acton Institute in their journal. I want people to start taking this seriously. Every time I give a speech and I bring this up, people roll their eyes and laugh and say, what will they think of next? Like it can't happen here. It's happening now. I want people to understand that if people do not, because most people will oppose this, if people don't take it seriously, it's going to keep moving forward to the point where you won't recognize your rights to earn a living using natural resources in the land. It's a very serious threat and a subversive threat to our way of life.
Wesley Smith is Senior Fellow at the Discovery Institute Center on Human Exceptionalism. He's a consultant to the Patients' Rights Council, columnist for National Review Online, author of several books, including The War on Humans, and a recent column titled The Return of Nature Worship. You can read it, and you can purchase War on Humans at our website, issuesetc.org. Click Listen on Demand. Wesley, thank you very much for your time.
Thanks, Todd. I always appreciate being on your show.
When we come back, Pastor Tom Baker joins us. We'll be teaching a Sunday school lesson, our weekly Sunday school lesson, talking about the Emmaus disciples, those two walking downcast and discouraged, and Jesus meets them. At first, they don't recognize him, but in time, they will. We'll be right back.
Hey, Todd, what have our listeners noticed first when visiting the LPR studios?
Definitely the small size and the dirt.
Well, not anymore. Thanks to our friends at the Cleaning Authority, they've turned this man cave into a space that meets even our wives' approval.
Whether it's our office or your home, the Cleaning Authority is your cleaning service provider in the St. Louis area.
To schedule a free estimate or to find out more, visit thecleaningauthority.com. thecleaningauthority.com.
O Lord, open my lips.
Listen to chapel services live, weekday mornings from Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana. Morning chapel from Kramer Chapel. Live, weekday mornings at 8:30 Central, 9:30 Eastern, 7:30 Mountain, and 6:30 Pacific at issuesetc.org.
The Lord bless us, defend us from all evil, and bring us to everlasting life.
Amen. Lutheran Federal Credit Union was formed to serve you and to serve the church. During August, when you open a Lutheran FCU loan to meet your financial needs, or when you use your Lutheran FCU credit card for a qualifying amount of purchases, Lutheran FCU will give you cash back and give that same amount of money to their Ministry of the Month, Lutheran Education Association. Learn more at LutheranFCU.org. Lutheran FCU. Good for you. Good for the church. LutheranFCU.org.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.
When you pray, "Give us this day our daily bread," what do you mean by daily bread? What do you really need to live? If you've ever puzzled over questions like these, you won't want to miss the August issue of The Lutheran Witness, with articles on downsizing, giving, and yes, what we mean by our daily bread. You're sure to come away with a more biblical view of wealth and poverty, possessions, and generosity. Visit cph.org/witness to subscribe today. The Lutheran Witness, interpreting the contemporary world from a Lutheran Christian perspective.